Hey everybody, welcome back to today's episode of No Killing Goblins. I'm Oshi, and I'm here with...
Dragoness.
Oh my god, you decided to go fun on this one.
Oh yeah, I am a bundle of joy this fine. Way too late for me to have been just waking up anyways.
We could have done it later in the day.
No, we really couldn't have. I'm too busy.
That's going to be a theme for us for the rest of this episode. We are too busy. Too busy to read, too busy to watch stuff, too busy to talk. But I'm going to lie right now about that. And I've watched a couple of things this weekend because today is the first day I have taken a day off and actually not done. I'm lying. I did do a little bit of work, but I didn't do a whole lot of work. Okay, but I'm rambling. We're supposed to be talking about a few things. So to start off, today's episode, we're turning over a new leaf. We finished volume 3, and we're kind of transitioning away from using the volumes as and following along on the website list, because at this point chapter lengths have ballooned, I think is the right word. So we're not. Go ahead.
Ballooned, expanded, exploded. I'm sure there's more synonyms here.
And that means that breakdowns and chapter-by-chapter discussion just does not work. And even character arcs are kind of a little too complex to just dive into without missing out on pieces, without context. Plus, I think from the just terms of manageability, and because it'll relate more to folks who are like audio listeners and Kindle book readers, and eventually when the print books come out, the print book readers, we were thinking about transitioning to following along in the printed book order or the published book order. Now, the published book order has I actually have a story about it because I know a little bit of inside baseball on how that came to be. So originally Pirate didn't have any plans to do, well, they wanted to, I'm sure, but they didn't have any experience setting up for publishing. By publishing, I mean publishing books and stuff like that. So the original volume 1 is just this giant, massive book. And so is volume 2. And when they went to their audiobook publishers, those things were so damn long. It took a while for everyone to figure out how to transition and translate Pirate's volumes into books. So the first 3 volumes are kind of oversized, massive books with 60 hour lengths. So the structure of the books changed over time. So book 1 is essentially the first volume of Wandering In. Book 2 is the second volume of Wandering In minus Wistrom Days. And then volume 3 was broken into 2 parts with Wistrom Days removed from the book 3 and all of Wistrom Days in book 4. So we had The Wandering In as the first book, Fae and Fair, then Flowers of Esthelm, and then Winter Solstice. All the covers done by the same artist, John Anthony DiGiovanni, I think. J.A.D. This is what I know him by. He's done all of the covers for the entire series up to date. And then we got to book 5 and book 6 where it was still long. And then I think assistant got hired and they had discussions in the background about how to cut down on the numbers. Because the numbers were a little high, even for a normal book, and it was getting to be a little bit too much. So I think they cut the numbers at about 350k words or about 40 hours, which is still huge. But they're that's where they're going. And I think based on that, we're looking at a series up to volume 9 that's 31, 32 entire books long, which is huge We're going to be reading this for a long time.
Yeah, I was actually joking with a friend the other day when we were talking about swapping over to like the book format and how it might even help us get caught up quicker. And I was like, oh yeah, and the books will be caught up with Pirate, like what, 2026, 2028?
Well, I mean, the pace of the publishing of the book, it's three every year. Pirate publishes three of these every year, right? Through the audiobook, and then they do the Kindle book publishing. And I think if the if volume one's like physical book production is a success, oh, let's hope they do multiple releases on the physical books too. Can you imagine how quickly we could catch up? In like 10 years, maybe. That's what I'm thinking. Like 10 years, 10 times 3, that's 30 books. We'll catch up, right?
Yeah, we'll catch up. And honestly, a part of me feels like how do I put this? I look at the little chart that I think it's up in where is it?
We
Yeah,
didn't even
because
talk about the chart. Go
it's
ahead.
in I think publishing on the Wandering Inn, and I
It's
look
in
at
like five different channels because nobody
yeah,
looks at it.
it's posted around everywhere. I honestly feel like something's gonna have to give, and this quote unquote 31 books is actually like, I don't know. I feel like the hours and word count is gonna have to go down, just for poor Andy's sake. Like I try to listen in on her stream sometimes, and these books beat her up. There's just so
Honestly, though,
much book to it.
I know, but that's why they're go they d are going down. Like the last five have been like all over the place, I think. But volume two was 61 hours, and then like Blood of Lescaur was like 50 hours or something. But with the way the books are being like set up from going forward, the hope is that they can cut down to like 30 hours maximum, which means that Andrea can, survive the recordings and do them 3 times a year. 30 to 40 hours. Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
At least that's the hope, anyway.
Even 30 to 40 hours feels like it might be a hair long, but hey, what do I know? I'm just a
Yeah.
random guy with a podcast.
Well, we can always ask. Andrea was here. We are now. She is a friend of the pos. Pot. The friend of the
Friend of the
pos?
cast.
A friend of the cast. When did I get? You know what it is? It's because I was listening to Lawrence Chaney, and nobody here knows who Lawrence Chaney is, but that's okay. She's a drag queen, and she's just so fucking funny. And like, oh, Blood of Lescaur was 43 hours, which was the last book that was released. Yeah.
I
Okay.
thought
Maybe
Blood
that.
of Lescaur was about to be released.
No, it was res the next book that's being released is Tears of Lescaur.
Oh, that's right, because it was like Rain's blood. I mixed up which was which.
Yeah, Rains, Blood, and Tears, which is water themes that follow along with Pirate Abba's
Yeah,
skills at.
I actually love the naming for those books. I think that it is particularly creative and evocative.
Yeah, I do enjoy. I hope we get something like that for like Volume 6's books. I think they decided on doing like five book for Volume 6. I looked into it and the chapter breakdown for it. There's only 16 quote unquote chapters in book 10, but that's not going to be how many real chapters it is. They're going to have to break everyone up because like each one's like 22K or 32K or 42K. Like it's just too much.
Yeah.
Okay, we're chatting too much about like the structure of it. By the way, for the chart that we're talking about is done by HK. I forget his whole name, but there's a volunteer on the Discord who spent the time on this, and Pirate just started using it, and we were like, "All right, that's it." I don't know how that happened. There's no professionalism attached to any of this. It's just organic or growth.
Hey, organic growth gets it done.
Yeah, I guess. So
But
for our purposes, we will be covering Book 5, The Last Light, for maybe 3, 4 episodes. And today's episode, we're just gonna do like a general overview of the book, what we thought
Yeah.
about it, what we liked and did not like. And for those who are following along with the chapters in the website, this is The Last Light covers chapter 4.00 to 4.31, including interludes, etc.
Yeah, and today I think we have our general review, what we thought of the book overall. Oshi can do everything he humanly can to avoid saying the words floss out loud.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I'm talking about your notorious hatred and distaste for floss as a character.
I mean, the character isn't the problem. It's the storylines that are the problem.
I don't know. I like his storyline, but we can dig into that when we actually get to it. Before that, though, and like other news and stuff that's been going on, I am super hyped for this physical printing of
The Wandering
Beware of
Inn?
Chicken. Well, and the
Oh,
Wandering Inn, but like Beware of Chicken just dropped, and we talk about Wandering Inn all the time, or just got announced. And I'm even more excited for the physical volume one.
I kind of wanted to talk about Practical Guide to Evil. Have you been following along in the Yonder releases?
No, it's just hard for me to work up the energy to when Pale is just objectively better in every way, and Practical Guide has so many negative feelings for me.
But it let's just say it got better.
Yeah, no, I'm betting that like the shift in tone from the Drow arc and like the changing of some of the core underlying themes probably carried over into the editing and
Well,
rewrite for
no,
Yonder. I hope. I hope.
yeah, that's part of it. But we're going with Beware of Chicken is having a hardcover run. Podium is doing the whole thing. I think Casual Farmer dropped it on a couple of days ago or something. Let me see if I remember exact. They're doing a limited edition. It's not like one of those things that's going to show up in your library. You could order it up until the end of the month, I think February 28th. We gotta speed up our episode releases so that this comes out at the right time. But if you were lucky enough to get it, that's great. I have a funny story about signatures, but I don't think I can tell it because I will be murdered if I do.
I'm just excited, and you say this isn't the kind of thing that's going to show up in your local library, but I was thinking I might buy like three copies and send two of them to my local library.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that would be really good. I
I
actually
like to do that, and
probably.
I've been giving books away like crazy, actually. I think I mentioned this in the Twitter and even like sent it to at least one other person, but I have a whole bunch of copies of Interview in Leather and Plan Prototype Produce Perfect. Just Kindle, Amazon code releases. So if anybody wants one, just send me a message. I'm just giving books away like candy this month.
I generally do. This is probably the worst metaphor. I just pictured in my head. I'm just this giant thing that consumes books and then I shit them out to the library. God damn it. I can't believe that came to my mind. But
Oh, wow, that was human centipede levels of nobody needed that in their lives.
I'm sorry. I just had that picture go into my head because I do read quite a bit and I buy a lot of ebooks and anytime that I enjoy a book enough, what I'll do, like Lois McMaster-Vujold, I think I bought her entire physical book series and then gave it away. I kind of need to buy a new set and keep it in my house because I love those books so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, if I really, really enjoy a book, instead of I don't know if everybody else is this. Instead of keeping the books, I keep the digital copies because I want to read them, but I try to get physical copies to a library so that they'll always, well, not forever, not if Bob the Grat Queen could burn it all down, but but they'll be there for a long time.
Yeah, I used to not really keep physical copies of things just because I didn't have space, right? So
Yeah, that's fair.
I think I have bought and given away a physical copy of every book in the Dresden Files series like three times.
I will say,
But.
I just this week when I was there's a reason I was like shuffling through the physical books. I just realized I have all the Harry Potter books except one.
I have never given away my copies of the Harry Potter stuff. Not to like go too deep into it, given all of the crazy Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling's a fucking moron controversy that's been floating around in the world. But
It's less of a
like,
controversy than an incontrovertible fact, but
oh
sure.
no, she's a moron. That's
Yeah.
incontrovertible fact. I dunk on her all you want. Just leave my precious Harry Potter franchise alone.
Fine, fine.
Well, no, I'm not even trying to be like one of those weird people that still has a fucking house thing up on their Facebook on the year of fucking 2023. But like the series meant a lot to me. I was a very unhappy
No.
child. I'm never
Okay.
giving those books away. I have
Okay.
those. They're specially set aside in storage.
Let's pause for a sec. I wanna address something. Look, an author can be a complete and utter dick, and their book can still be good. Does it also have little bits and pieces of the author showing that they are complete and utter dick? Yes, it will.
Yeah,
But
usually.
that doesn't necessarily make or break a piece of work. It is what it is. And for every millennial between the ages of, I think, 26, 7 right now, and like 38, 39, these are the books that made, this was our Star Wars. And the reason I mentioned that I have all the Harry Potter books, because you can track as I became more and more of a super fan, I went from the very first paperback. I have a preserved paperback mass market copy from like 1990s, and then the second book is also paperback, and then the third book becomes a hardback, and it goes hardback, 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 and then you find the moment where I fell out of love with Harry Potter because I never bought the last book.
Oh, no, it was the whole way through for me. I was going through some fucking shit, especially in the tail end of high school. The knowledge that there was like one more Harry Potter book coming out was, I kid you not, one of the deciding factors between me being here today and not. I have all of them. And despite the fact I give stuff away like crazy, like I was saying, because I just never had space for it, I have those set aside in storage. Although I've been collecting more and more stuff, and I have like a bookcase I look at now of stuff that I've kickstarted, or, oh God, stuff that I've kickstarted. I have like $1,000 worth of Power Rangers signed comic books that I impulse bought and basically ate nothing but rice and beans for 6 months.
Oh my God.
But they're so pretty, and like, I never used to really understand how much I liked having nice things until I could like set them on the shelf, and now I'm afraid because I really liked this run of comic books, but I don't want to read them because I paid so much.
I wanted to talk a little bit about book covers to change the subject entirely because, well, two things. One, the Discord posted about this BookTuber. Oh my God, I have to find the BookTuber right now, but she started reading The Wandering Inn. She did not finish it, but she said she would, and she's very funny. Ridiculously good makeup. In any case, she was reading through it, and she was like, I like, she was so confused. Like, she thought this was like an RPG that was being translated into a book because she's never really experienced like web serials or anything. She doesn't know anything about it. It's like, virgin, we got a virgin, pop that cherry. So it was frankly amazing, and I gotta have to give me a second. I'm gonna find the BookTuber very quickly. Ooh, I promise I have a pr and the reason I want to talk about it is because she said that the volume one cover was fantastic, and I'm not a fan. I'm one of the few people who's like, this is nice, but compare it to like volume, like the General Le Scaur or the Fay and Fair book. I mean, I don't really love the first in thing.
I like the Wandering Inn cover. I'm not wild about it, but I like it in theory. I like the idea of, the lonely inn on a hill. You have this sort of skeletal figure standing by the sign. And you're like, is that a person? Is that a zombie? A skeleton? Undead? There's only one light on. You've got, like, I just feel like the execution is slightly off from the level of what like Pirate has nowadays. Because Pirate has so many talented artists and people and all this fan art and all these people to work with, and this just feels like maybe it needed another two passes.
It's not even that it needed two passes. It felt like it's very much volume one centric, where it's not quite fully formed, the idea of it. Like, it feels like this is the Wandering Inn, but it's like the view of the Wandering Inn when you don't even know what the Wandering Inn is yet. You know? And there's a character to the painting, but there's no character to the whatever you want to call it. Like, I'm not finding the booktuber. Why can't I find? I just subbed to her. Why can't I find it? And of course, Discord is being weird, so I can't even look my own stuff up. Ugh.
Yeah,
Okay.
no, the moment you try and like remember the name, and unfortunately I just don't know which booktuber you're talking about.
I can't. I know. You know how horrible I am with names. I say it
Same.
all the damn time. Oh. The other thing was, I listened to this other booktuber who talked about how much they love the Vorkosigan books. Anyway, point being, covers. Do you remember the Animorph covers?
Yeah.
Let me just tell you. I know modern covers are very, like, conceptual and they use, like, pop art style sometimes. Fuck that shit. I want an Animorph type cover.
Like, the Animorph covers are very conceptual, and I dare say that a few of them even have, like, a style that verged on pop art. If it was a little bit more stylized and less trying to be realistic. Like, oh God, I would love to see, like, because, you know, you've got the show coming out, and they're probably going to wind up printing the whole fucking run when that happens and sticking new covers on them. I would love it if instead of having like the actual picture of a person and then having it shift into the animal, if they did it more artistically and stylized, now that I think about it. Because those covers, they were striking, they were unique, they immediately delivered to you the core idea of the book, and it was fucking awesome. And like that led to me picking up the series and starting at book two because I was always a cat person and there was a cat. So I'm like, ooh, cat. And then I picked it up.
I suck. Whatever. I can't find her name. If I find her name, I will tell people about it. She's like 12K follower, so of course she doesn't need my endorsement, but it's just fantastic that people are like organically finding the Wandering Inn and stuff, and that they enjoy the covers. But I want a better cover for Volume One if they do the physical book. I do. I think the cover could have more literal characters in it. I don't know. Something actually
I
just
don't know.
isn't.
So in the same way that like the cathedral is such a character and such a part of something like the Hunchback of Notre Dame, I feel like the inn is itself a character, and it has a great deal of character in these stories.
That inn
And
blew up like 4 inns ago, so no.
okay, but spiritually, it is still the same inn, and
Okay.
I feel like the first cover focusing on the inn itself kind of captures and conveys the inn as an important part of the story. This is not a story of somebody who goes on adventures. This is the story of somebody who finds an adventure in creating a home and creating this inn. It's the thing I recommend most about this story is this is not the chosen one with the sword going out to fucking slay the dragon. This is the place that person goes when they really just need a fucking drink and to decompress. And holy shit, I almost died. What the fuck?
I guess, but that wasn't really how it was presented. It's like old and broken and dead, and like that's what I'm like thinking about whenever I think about the first inn. It was like this creaky old thing that
Yeah.
Aaron just managed to bring back to life, but that's, yeah,
Yeah.
anyway.
And it's the journey of bringing this inn back to life, right? Like, Aaron got a not a great hand, wandered into this old decrepit building and said, "Well, I'll do with this what I can." I don't know. Like I said, I like it conceptually. I just think that it could use a little bit more. I don't know. I think character to the inn itself. Maybe I think it should be a bit more zoomed out so you get a real feeling. Maybe Liscor in the background so that you can kind of get a feel for the scale of that city and its distance. I don't know. I don't hate it, but like I get why you don't.
Yeah, I can. Okay, so let's move away from this conversation black hole. We were supposed to talk about a bunch of things, but I did want to mention Practical Guide to Evil, right? So I've been enjoying the rewrites, and the rewrites are, I think, significantly better. There's the usual odd moments that when it comes to EE's kind of style, but it's more established. Like, the characters are better fleshed out. There's more of a concerted effort to maintain a sense of flow and pacing. Like the intro, like Catherine's introduction into Prace is being handled very well. It's not rushed. It doesn't feel like she just teleports from one place to another. Instead, it's she travels. She talks about the world. She talks about the place she's going. Her distance and her choice to hold start the rebellion so that she can climb, all of that is explored and the consequences are allowed to breathe, and it's not, it's just none of it is rushed.
Here is my one question that's sort of going to decide my overall opinion of this book series again and whether or not I bother picking it up to reread it when I have the time. Is. I'm trying to find the right way to phrase this so I don't come across as too aggressive. But is that first William and that first band of heroes still being described in terms that could be most generously called fucking morons, incapable of having a correct idea or opinion, no matter how objectively correct their rebellion is?
We haven't even gotten there.
Not even met William yet? Because you meet him
Nope.
super early. Do they change him?
I'm trying to tell you. You meet William. Well,
Yeah.
the whole lore thing, but William isn't treated as a moron. There, like he isn't treated as a joke. He's treated as like funny in that heroic way. But there is not, like I said, the sense of pacing is much better done. There is development in that moment when she meets the other claimants. There is development in their battle. There is actually a literal chapter about the aftermath of what happens once he washes up from the on the shore. You know Hunter, the hot dude that dies, and we have no idea why he dies or what the fuck
Yeah,
his point was.
the one who felt like he was literally just there to be a fucking joke, and that annoyed the shit out of me.
On it, he is treated like a funny joke, but it's more, it's not, he's not part of the laughter. You're laughing at the situation, not at him.
I mean, that's
Like,
better. Like, I mean, so this is a big story, and I don't want to, like, specifically spoil things, but I always felt that, like, Hunter and that one conjurer got done
the
particularly
bumbling conjurer?
bump. They got
Look.
done particularly dirty by just the way that EE wanted to portray the heroic characters early on in that
Well,
story.
and in this way, because of the way the framing works, that particular opinion is no longer the story's opinion. It's William's opinion. He's the one who's like the gritty hero having to deal with the bumbling comedic hero and the bright, lucky hero. Like he's having to he's Batman dealing with the Flash and what's the other guy who's really funny? The Beast Boy.
Okay, that dynamic I can like more
Yeah,
than the dynamic. But like, okay, like that's see, that's just my question. If the dynamic and framing has changed, and that, probably means I'll pick it up.
Jordalene Reed is the YouTuber. I just scrolled through 15, 20 pages of commentary to get there. But Jordalene Reed is her name. She did ranting about Hellbent. She had some really, like, as usual, when someone agrees with you, you love them. And she had some very terse words for a few things that I was very pissed about. And she did a really great job. And she posted about The Wandering End. So go sign up for Jordaline and tell her to come listen to The Wandering End. I think like 40 people commented on her thing when it was posted, but we'll see. Anyway, sorry, I interrupt you. Go on, go on, go on.
Oh,
You're
no,
set.
I was pretty much just done. And actually, I was thinking about how we probably have, bear with us, but I think there is a little bit more commentary on covers just for book five. Because if we're going to start it on book five, because if you let me ramble anymore, I'm going to start talking about this Fate-related board game that's been eating up my soul for the past 2 weeks and that I've been playing 6 hours of a day on Steam that's really good called Fate Domination. Everybody should check it out. But the cover of not volume five, book five, which I think is actually my favorite book cover of all the ones out.
Okay, so now that we've discussed other series and other books, oh my God, Darman was allegedly accused of fucking with people.
Who?
Okay, you don't know Darman, but Darman is a phenomenon on YouTube. This is why I don't have YouTube open when we're doing this, by the way. Darman is he creates these highly produced moralistic YouTube videos that teaches lessons like don't be a bully or don't be racist or treat each other with kindness. And that sounds good in theory, but when you watch them, it's as if you're watching those old 80s training videos with the horrible scripts. And it's like you're watching it and you're like, should I be laughing at this? Is this like ironic? And is it why is it so cringe? And you, I can't watch them, but lots of people love them, and apparently there's some kind of controversy with them, which I will have to find out at a later time.
I'm betting it's probably not far off from the Ellen DeGeneres thing. The person publicly presents themselves as anti-bullying, anti this, that, and the other thing, and behind the scenes, they're just a fucking asshole to everyone near them.
Oh, there is absolutely no way he presents himself as this. He does these videos straight up because it gets him money.
Oh, fair. Like I said, I'm not familiar with his stuff, but. Anyways, words, words, words. Volume, sorry, I'm gonna say volume a lot, and I apologize to everyone. Book five, The Last Light. Just to sort of start from the front, because we've talked a bunch about covers, this is my favorite. I love it.
Yep. Okay, so for me, it's the reason I mentioned the Animorphs before is because there is a lack of, I don't want to say diversity because it implies like sexual or racial diversity or queer diversity. No. What I mean is there is a sense that as time has gone by and the publishing houses have crunched over and over again, they find a particular pattern that works for a particular subgroup that they like, and then they try to replicate it over and over and over again. And they've reached a point where I am now just disgusted by some of the, not because they're bad, but just because they're just the same thing over again when they could do such a better job. Meanwhile, I watch another booktuber named Edward something. I always forget his last name. And he posts like these beautiful like covers that are Jack Edwards is his name actually. And he would post these beautiful covers of these British covers while the American ones are some like bullshit stuff. Like it's just it's sad. It is so sad. Okay, we talked way too much about covers. Maybe we should go talk about this book's cover and which is The Last Light.
Yes. I think that this is a perfect book color, a book cover.
I don't I actually wished Pirate wasn't so insistent on like I like book 8 and book 7 and book 6's covers more because this one feels like it's a scene in media like stuff is happening, but somehow it's also empty at the same time. Because you have that the War Walker in the background.
Is that a War Walker? Oh yeah,
It's a
he's
war.
tall enough. That's probably a War Walker. Yeah, but like that's kind of what I
Yeah.
like about it. You've got this big armored guy, the Dullahan in the background. What's going on with him? At first glance, it looks like you're just looking at a peaceful scene, and then you notice the fire and the swords planted into the ground like graves. There's a little catechist staff on the white flag, and like the more you look at it, the more detail you see is there, but it's bright and colorful to catch your eye. And I like the sort of watercolor plants. Like it's just a really good cover. I think it captures the mood.
I think the paint work on this is phenomenal. The detail work is also phenomenal. But my objection to it is this is like a doctor's, because it's Geneva, it's a doctor's tent, right? And you would think that there would be people running in and out of the doctor's tent. But there's no one. It feels empty. There's like a silhouette that you could see from the distance. But then I guess what they were trying to represent was that moment when Geneva was ambushed. But at the same time, I don't know.
I don't,
It just
I
felt
feel like
weird.
this is more capturing the mood that is Ballaros, right? You've got this beautiful jungle and this peaceful seeming scene, and then you really start to look at it and you realize that this entire image is consumed by war.
I literally like every cover after this one and like one of the ones before this one, but yeah, all told, it's still a wonderful like work itself. Props to JAD and whoever else did like design work on this.
Yeah, it's definitely one of my favorites. But then again, this book is actually not one of my favorites because I'm gonna go ahead and say I'm just not a huge fan of the Geneva chapters. I like
Or
them.
the King and Chandrar chapters for me.
Yeah.
It's not so much that the novel, it like the book itself is badly, I mean it's pirate.
Yeah.
The quality improves over time, and by the time you get to this particular series of books, pirate is finally starting to figure out their style, their sense of purpose, and they're experimenting enough to like push the boundaries of what they're capable of. And I think by the end of this volume, which is end of volume 4, they kind of settle in, and volume 5 is just such gangbusters.
Yeah, I feel like this volume was when Pirate hit their stride. And I think the only thing that you could complain about as like the volume structure overall is that Pirate was still a little heavy-handed in the side chapters pacing-wise, right? It's a lot of King chapters in a row, and then like a few chapters later, it's a lot of Doctor chapters in a row. But I think as an individual standalone book, it paces out way better.
Absolutely, yeah. I think the early chapters in Chandrar. So one thing you'll notice is that Pirate does do like, at least in this book, they do these long arcs, right? And it becomes something of, and I want to acknowledge this, people complained that because of the long arcs, there wasn't enough Eren, there wasn't enough focus on the inn, because they had grown attached to the cast of characters in Lascaur and then Israel, and Pirate's exploration of other areas and other timelines, not timelines, what am I saying? Plot lines becomes more apparent and more explicit, and Pirate spends time elsewhere. The gr complaints tend to grow. My complaints about Chandrar and the plot lines that are there, it doesn't have anything to do with moving perspectives. I'll talk about that elsewhere at a different time, but in general, it is something that's perfectly reasonable. And if you're one of the dirty skippers, I know I'm calling you dirty, but honestly, it's okay if you're reading the free chapters or if you're reading these books to go like, I don't want to listen to this. I don't want to read this. This isn't particularly feeling to me. And come back to backfill some of the information that you're going to get, because it is a long series, and it is perfectly reasonable for you to skip around a little bit because the stories are self-contained enough and the plot lines are self-contained enough that you can do that and comfortably still keep up. Pirate makes every effort to to put you in that situation.
Volume 6, I think I skipped just about every early Ryoka chapter in that until I had to go back and reread them all at once, just because it was peak me distaste Ryoka. But then I realized that I had accidentally skipped the chapters that made me start liking Ryoka. So, you get a weird thing like that. My thing is,
It's
I
go ahead.
understand the idea that, people want more Eren and that perspective and that plot, but like, Pirate plays a long game, and everything Pirate sets up is part of this massive machine, and all of the gears have to be put into place. And I think, we're all here because we love Eren, and I think the only character in the series every single person likes because they're here to read the whole way through are Eren and probably the Horns. Everyone likes the Horns. They may hate individual members of the Horns, but the Horns are perfect. Everyone loves them. So yeah, you get something like this, or the Doctor chapters all in a row, or much later on, the stuff with the witches. But there's always going to be some number of people who are like, this isn't my jam, this is somebody else's jelly, where's my jam at?
And
Or
it's fair to
even
say that
worse,
there
this is
are.
neither jam nor jelly, this is compound butter with garlic in it, and I'm allergic to that stuff.
Is, as I've noted, entire, like, there's an entire group of people who absolutely adore the Chandra'ar and Geneva plot lines. And they love the intersections and the exploration of things, and they like the way it happens. And they wish that there was more of it. And this tends to build. I think this is the point where I would say it is the tipping point where Pirate's exploration of different castes and different groups sort of ballooned, and the there was quite a bit of controversy about who's better and which plot line's good and why is it good. You saw Pirate, I think, at this point is firmly in control of what they want to do with the series. And that's why they started introducing other plot lines other than their own, I'm sure, writing instincts. They just this is when they knew where they were going, right?
Yeah. And I sometimes wonder if, like, the long delay between other stuff leading to, say, all these King chapters at once specifically is because Pirate had been putting a lot of thought into who Trey and Terrace and Floss were going to be. Like, I'm betting the bones were always there, but that there was a lot of filling in the blanks, and Pirate was just kind of putting it off, and then had to sort of get them established properly all at once. And I mean, say what you will about the King chapters, it does an excellent job establishing, like, this very wide cast of characters and Trey as a perspective. And the Doctor chapters, I mean, the Doctor chapters slap.
I mean, yeah, they do. I mean, this is the core of Geneva's story, and it's what establishes it. And to be honest, this is no hate to Geneva. This is, I think, I criticize Pirate about this a little bit on their choice. They produced a character that, over the years, my opinion has not moved at all. Geneva is very passive, explicitly because of the kind of person that she is and the morals and the purpose that she sets herself to. But that passivity angers me, not because it's wrong, but because it feels like Geneva's choices are so baked in, there's no surprise. Like, terrible thing happens to Geneva, Geneva does nothing. Terrible thing happens to Geneva, Geneva does nothing. Terrible things happen to people, Geneva fixes their injuries, then Geneva does nothing. This
Yes.
is very reductive, but that makes the story more predictable. And that makes it hard for me to enjoy some of the parts of Geneva as a character.
So I think that that's a deliberate character flaw, right? That's why in those chapters we start bringing in the other people and the Kenjiro and Dolly and this other group of Earthers and
Luan,
Luan.
Luan,
We'll
Luan.
talk about
Okay.
Luan, But
Okay, I'm
the
just saying.
point of them in general was to try and put these people that are going to try and shake up and change Geneva's patterns and introduce like a second force to that. But and this is something that I think we'll just have to wait till later Doctor chapters.
And I promise we'll have like I think we'll have an episode on the
Yeah, we've got
Chandra.
yeah.
We'll do an episode on Chandra, we'll do an episode on Geneva, we'll do an episode on Lescure, because there's quite a few of Lescure, especially the 3L chapters are in this one, where Pawn and Leonette's thing happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we gotta talk
So
about
yeah, no, this is definitely just us on a wide overview, but I think that I'm trying to think of these Doctor chapters in a vacuum. I like them a great deal. I think it's the next set that we'll have to talk about later on that are the ones that have me feeling a little bit down on the Doctor. But that is for later times.
I do appreciate that Pirate did take moments in this particular book to drop in on Nears and Magnolia, because you kind of needed to do that. They started like I don't know how else to say it. They started like what's the word I'm looking for? Fading a little bit into the background. Nears never was. So Nears is coming more into the foreground while Magnolia fades more and more into the background. Because I think the direct interaction between Aaron and Magnolia kind of drops, because Magnolia's busy doing Magnolia things, and we don't kind of know about that stuff, which, yeah, I have opinions on that. I wish Pirate had gone into it. We also have a really cool, like, horns chapter in the middle of this. I think. Yeah, there's a moment with, like, a horns chapter and Kissimber and Ciri and them, and they did stuff. I really want to talk about it. It was like one of those break chapters that I really enjoy.
Yeah.
I'll
But
say, go ahead.
I'll have to say, I mean, Magnolia definitely is like the next book, which is one I'm going to be aggressively happy to talk about for a great deal because that's when my boys. But I was going to say something about this chapter. Oh, yeah.
Which chapter?
So this chapter, or sorry, this book, I think, is a lot of like international setup stuff, and I don't think you can do that without bringing up Magnolia a little, because it's apparent by now, but I think still needs to be elaborated upon in the story. Magnolia is an international player who's just tooling around in the regional scene for the moment.
I guess. Yeah, for sake of not intercontinental, but definitely
International.
within,
And
international, yeah.
if like the situation was a bit different on her continent and her species wasn't stuck in a wasteful forever war with the Drakes and there wasn't all this other bullshit going on, she probably could be like an intercontinental person. She's at least an intercontinental name.
I mean, we all know that the Goblin War, the Goblin King's arrival, and then the Antinium Wars kind of blew up the whole human versus Drake situation. And it's both a horrific tragedy and a great opportunity. And Magnolia has stated before, in no uncertain words, peace at any cost is her business.
Yeah, she. God, this is gonna sound. I don't know why, but I just suddenly thought about her in terms of. Oh God, what is the name of the villain of Revengeance? Shit. Metal Gear Revengeance.
Oh, I don't remember his name.
Oh, hold on. Fucking. Nope. Nope, no phone call right now. Armstrong, where it's you have a person who's absolutely a product of their time, and that leads. We get told a lot, like background, that Magnolia has done some incredibly shady shit, but I don't know. We just don't see it from her that much.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, Magnolia is Magnolia, and I've talked about it ad nauseum that there are characters that are underserved because the plot lines and the stories Pirate's trying to tell don't intersect with them very well. yet they're still significant to the plot lines as they are. And that, and because Pirate spoils the reader by developing these characters so well, Celis comes to mind. And in this particular book, we have Lynette, her development, and Pawn's development, and the Horns, Ryoka, and her friendship with Ivaleth, the whole situation. And we literally develop the twins and Flos and Geneva, and even the Emperor stuff gets a moment, I think. I forget what it was exactly is happening, but I know for a fact that there's like a stretch of chapters about it. But there's so much development of these characters, and then and I'll quote a longtime reader who said this before, the Inworlders remain significantly more interesting than the Earthworlders.
For some of them, I actually strongly disagree with that in general. I think I might be using my brain for future knowledge, but I think it's really hard for that not to happen in the Flos chapters because it's ultimately the story of two normal people dropped into a situation where they are surrounded by legends, by
I mean, that's.
names. It's
I don't.
hard to be more interesting than Gazi.
Well, at least be like. I don't know. Well, I'll leave it at that. I think we'll wrap up for now and we'll get deeper into the various plot lines and storylines in the next couple of episodes. Then we'll wrap up the book and get into the General of Israel right afterwards. I think it'll be like 3 or 4 episodes total. Thanks for listening, everybody. Do you have anything to say, Dragonus, before we go
Yeah, I'm about
off?
to say, before we exactly wrap up, I was just gonna say that I think, if we're gonna talk about these book by book, we should give them a rating. And I think Pirate might still listen to this occasionally, so 10 out of 10. I kid, I kid. But I don't know, overall, I like this book. I think it was a great division of stuff for a book. And then I remember that you mentioned the Emperor chapters, and I'm like, I just listened to this on audiobook this week. There were Emperor chapters? Like,
I'm pretty sure there were E-labeled chapter. Wasn't there E-labeled chapters?
They're after the Doctor chapters, but like, I get so caught up in the Doctor and the King, and then you got that Horn stuff right after, and then like the start of the next book brings in my boys, and then I'm just thinking, oh, hold on a second. Laken was in this, wasn't he?
And this is what I mean by like sometimes some characters fall away. Regardless, for me, if I'm going to put it on a scale, from I'm gonna compare this. I'm gonna put a caveat here because I don't want to get canceled. I'm gonna compare this to in two ways. One is gonna be out of like a normal, is this a readable book? Is this enjoyable thing? And then I'm gonna compare it in terms of the other books in the series. So, first rating out of 10 for just a general book, I'd put it at a solid 8.5. It did not hit a 10 for me. There are better books out there that, like, Pirate, I love you, but there's a limit to how far the love will go.
Yeah,
This is not like burning, I will read this until the end of the universe kind of
eight
book.
and a half is, I think, more fair.
Yeah. And then but it did, it was exciting. It did introduce characters. It did keep me engaged the whole way through. It was the prose was significantly improving over time. That we hadn't yet gotten to the point where Pirate was paying attention to like dialogue tags and things, but I was getting over it, and it's I hear that the audiobook was a much smoother read or listen. And I did really enjoy the developments in Lescure, especially with Pawn, Lynette, and Ryoka, Ivaleth, and Eren's whole thing. And then I did love the Nier's chapter, and the introduction of Luan was my moment of zen.
Yeah, and honestly, I feel like these King chapters are way better in retrospect because I can now realize just how much Pirate is setting up and how much heavy lifting is going on there.
Well, yeah,
And
that's the thing about Pirate, right?
it is a little bit of a ding that, like, I mean, I love them. I actually really like the Floss plot lines, but I've tried a very way to put it. It is a lot all at once in a way that is not like ideal pacing, but at the same time, I now understand that it is going somewhere. And I don't know,
It takes a.
trust,
That's the
that's what
thing
we're
about
looking
pirate.
for. Trust for
Yeah,
trust that the
you.
author actually has a plan, which if nothing else, pirates kind of earned that trust by now.
I would hope so, but that's the thing about pirate stories. They tend to have a much lower floor, but a much higher ceiling because of it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Like, you have to start further down to get further up. And yeah, so the second rating on a more like between the books rating, I would say, honestly, I'd rank this above book two. But below, like Flowers of Best Home, three and four, I would say.
Yeah, although Flowers of Esalm is one of my favorites. Like, out of the stuff we've covered, that one's number one for me, and this is a
Yeah.
solid two.
This is like a solid three, maybe closer to a four, depending on, because I really liked book one because of the rewrite. I know the rewrite stuff, so I enjoyed book one a lot. And I think book one's slowly crawling up the rankings for me because of it.
I mean, the rewrite's basically going to have to be a whole four episodes on its own, which is going to be exciting.
Okay. Now that we, by the way, let say bye, Dragoness.
Goodbye.
I didn't say his name once. Fuck you.
Yeah, I know
Okay.
you didn't. We're probably bringing on
Bye.
a guest star for the king. Goodbye, everybody.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
Edited by Liquid Ender.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at No Killing Goblin or email us at nokillinggoblins with an S at gmail.com.